Hi everyone, thanks for joining us today. As Carl mentioned, we do have a really exciting, or what I hope will be an exciting panel discussion prepared for you guys today. Just a little bit about myself, my name is Simon, and for the past couple of years I've been working as the program manager of the LA County Care Connections program. We're a community health worker program working primarily with complex care patients with my colleagues over there will explain more about the program. So just to get into it, our session today is titled Best Practices to Support and Sustain CHWs as Part of Integrated Care Delivery. And before I introduce our presenters, I wanted to talk briefly about why we, as we're thinking through this panel discussion idea, why we thought this discussion would be important. And as you may and should already know, community health workers bring tremendous value to patient care teams, to health delivery teams. They are frontline public health workers who, because of a shared background, a shared culture, a shared lived experience with patients, are able to build relationships with patients in a way that traditional healthcare delivery models have not been able to do before. And through this relationship that community health workers are able to build, they're able to provide patients with healthcare that really is patient-centered and culturally competent and compassionate. And while community health workers are amazing and do amazing things, challenges still exist to fully integrating community health workers onto the healthcare delivery team. And we're hoping that this forum, this discussion, would really be an opportunity to discuss some of these barriers to integration, as well as some of the best practices that four leading community health worker programs have implemented to address some of these barriers. The four programs that we have here today are the Sinai Urban Health Institute. We have Kim Gutierrez, and we have Kim Gutierrez here representing the Sinai Urban Health Institute. We also have Rachel Weidenfeld and Sori Santana from the Prevention and Access to Care and Treatment Program. We have Ami Shah and Brandy Sankey from the Care Connections Program. And we also have Reverend Deborah Hickman and Demetrius Frazier from the Tumaini Hope for Health Program. For more information on each of these programs, I want to refer you guys to the handouts. If you don't have it yet, there's some hopefully left at the back of the room. Just a brief overview of what we envision this panel discussion to look like. After this short introduction, we're going to give each of these programs around 6 to 7 minutes to provide an overview of their program as well as the role of the CHW within their interventions, and also the opportunity to present on some of the challenges to integrating CHWs into the healthcare delivery team. And then we're going to have most of the discussion, or most of the panel discussion opened up for you guys. We really want to acknowledge, so while we have four programs here who we believe will present an expert opinion on some of the challenges as well as best practices to integrating CHWs onto healthcare delivery team, we also want to acknowledge the expertise that's in the room. And we hope that this last section, the moderated discussion section, will just be an opportunity for us to engage with each other, ask questions, and make comments, and really be lively and engaging. It's right after lunch, so we want to make sure that you guys are up and excited and ready to go. And I think that's it. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce Melissa from the Sinai Urban Health Institute.
We can do double, triple names. Hello, my name is Melissa Gutierrez-Kapheim. As Simon said, I'm from the Sinai Urban Health Institute, and my colleague Kim Artis is supposed to be here, but I think there might be something wrong, so we're working on that, but hopefully she'll make it. So I wanted to first start out and give you all a warm welcome to the city of Chicago. I'm from Chicago, and it's a wonderful place, despite what you might hear on the news. It is not all that scary. And I thought we could start off with a little bit of trivia to lighten the mood. So does anyone know why Chicago is referred to as the Windy City? Ah, thank you. When I got out of my car today, I thought everyone would say, because it is really windy out, but Carl Sandburg, a famous poet, he said that all of the politicians were full of hot air, and therefore it became known as the Windy City. So everything you hear from here on out from a Chicagoan, take with a grain of salt. So the Sinai Urban Health Institute is affiliated with the Sinai Health System. We are a safety net hospital. I like to just kind of put this in context. We're about 5 miles west of Grant Park. You can see a lovely view of the skyline from some of our offices in the top of the parking garage, but that does not mean that we are working in the laps of luxury as many of our downtown offices will be. New York City is double the population of the city of Chicago, and they have 12 publicly funded hospitals. The city of Chicago has one. Therefore, hospital systems like the Sinai Health System take up the rest of those patients that can't seek care anywhere else. We serve both an African American and Hispanic population. There's a rich tradition of serving populations of need. Those communities were originally a Jewish community. They all moved north, and now residents are African American and Hispanic. Martin Luther King actually moved his family to North Lawndale, and he decided to be there to show that racial struggles and segregation occurred in the northern communities just as they did in the south. So I like to give that a little bit of historical context so you know why we are doing what we're doing. We've had a long history of employing community health workers and integrating them into their healthcare system. It's funny, this is, you know, I think Carl just gave some really excellent statistics showing that the community health worker profession is really advancing. But for many of us, this has been something that we've been doing for a long time. Now we are excited because people want to make it part of the mainstream and, you know, eventually fund it. So we have programs in asthma, diabetes, breast health, system navigation, working on decreasing no-show rates, and a couple other care coordination type models. We're really a leading expert in the community health worker model and implementation in the state of Illinois. I'm fortunate to be a co-chair of the Illinois CHW Advisory Board, and in 2010 we published a document that we called Community Health Worker Best Practice Guidelines. They're definitely, what we tried to do is look at what are research out there that look at topics around hiring, training, supervision. We've also been starting to consult on healthcare organizations. With other healthcare organizations, we notice that everyone is interested. Oh, how do I implement the community health worker model? And, you know, they hire people and expect them to wave fairy dust onto others and work miracles. So we've been really trying to help people, train them on how to implement that properly. So as I said, community health workers are really at the core of our work in eliminating health disparities. We subscribe to the APHA definition of community health workers, and we really strongly practice that in hiring people from the communities that we're serving. That they don't have to have any medical background. We're put them through a pre-training session to help preview candidates. And then we intensively train them and evaluate their field readiness and support community health workers through peer mentoring and supervision. Kind of skip ahead. So the next two slides will, and this is my colleague Kim Artis. Hi, Kim. And so the next two slides, we're going to talk to you about challenges around integrating and sustaining from the program perspective, my perspective, and then I'll turn it over to Kim, and she'll talk about her perspective. So one of the ones that we really see is role confusion, and this promotes fear of job encroachment. So we see nurses say, well, why are they doing that? I do this. Patient handoffs and communication, that therefore there is a lack of patient handoffs and communication. Again, this is what causes a lot of problems. Tracking of value-added work performed by community health workers. So sometimes it's really easy, like with asthma, to show cost savings, but not as easy to show something in no-show. So really working on how to address that. And electronic medical records, love them. Also sometimes very difficult to integrate them and integrate it with our programs. And then policy level challenges. You know, I think the biggest thing that's going in our state right now is we have no budget. We have a Republican governor, and they say, sure, it saves money, but we have to pay first and save later, and we can't do that. CHW certification, and then changes in healthcare. I heard this quote the other day, and I really liked it. It's not a sprint, it's a marathon. And I'll turn it over to Kim now, who will talk about some challenges from the CHW perspective.
Good afternoon, everybody. Great to see so many faces here. My name is Kim Arts. I'm a community health worker with Sinai Urban Health Institute's AGMA program. And we're going to talk about, again, some of the challenges that we have out in the field, actually out doing the work. And some of that is with our patients' competing priorities. And what I mean by that is that life is happening for them on a regular basis. And sometimes taking care of their health is not the number one thing that's going on. There's some issues of how am I going to pay the lights? Where are my kids going to eat tonight? All these different things do play a large part in what's going on in the homes that we go and see. Another thing is the lack of behavioral health. There's a lot of mental illness going on. Does everybody agree with that? Absolutely. A lot of mental illness going on, and we don't have the proper resources to actually connect people to services. So those are some of the things that we come in contact with as well. Another understanding that we do have is the lack of understanding of the role and the abilities of community health workers inside the healthcare system. Not trying to throw stones or anything like that, but it's really important that everybody is on board with knowing what a CHW is, knowing what the role is, and knowing the benefit of having somebody like that in your office setting, in your establishment, because it does bring a very, very broad perspective and also an inside peek at what's going on. Another thing is that we indeed are an asset to the healthcare system. It's like having a cheat card, all right? Another thing is that we become more with the mediators. We become the people that connect them back to the healthcare system and things of that ability, things of that nature. And also, the issue that we come across is sustainability for CHWs, because a lot of us work on grant-funded programs, and guess what? Sometimes it's not enough money to keep us rolling. And then, there's just people feeling like, okay, if a CHW is working, what about my job being the nurse or the other assistants that are in the offices? So that does become an issue. So there's a lot of other things that we do have challenges with. However, we can discuss that during the question and answer period. So if you have any questions, please write them down, and I'll be more than happy to address those for you. Thank you.
Hi, everybody. Thanks so much for coming. I'm Rachel Weidenfeld. I'm a public health social worker, and I work with the PACT program in Boston. This is my colleague, Soridania. So our program is called PACT, and it stands for Prevention and Access to Care and Treatment. We're a community-based HIV program. So I'm just going to tell you a little bit about how the program started. So it was founded in 1997 by Heidi Befferoos, who was a primary care doc in Boston. And she worked with Brigham and Women's Hospital. And so I'll tell you a little more in a minute about how, sort of why she founded it. But essentially, we were originally a joint program of the hospital and of Partners in Health, which is more known for its CHW programs internationally, like in Haiti. But this was a version of that program set in Boston, but using the same kind of model. And then in 2013, the PACT program actually moved to Justice Resource Institute, which is a really great community-based organization in Boston, so it was a little bit of a different home for us. Definitely a transition from being sort of part of a huge hospital research system to being part of a community-based organization. And so there were some things we had to adjust to around data and money, I would say, and then also some real benefits in terms of the community programs that were a part of JRI. So we work with all the different hospitals in the Boston area. Basically, if we can drive to them, they can refer to us. So there's some things like upwards of 20 different hospitals and health centers, anybody that has an infectious disease or an HIV program. And our program is staffed by community health workers. And we use the accompaniment model that Partners in Health talks about, where we talk about walking with people. So not walking ahead of somebody and kind of pulling them behind you, or walking behind them and just nudging them along, but ideally walking alongside them at whatever point they are. So PACT patients primarily are Black and Latino men and women living below the poverty line. A lot of them are referred to us after their HIV disease has gotten pretty out of control. So I had done 10 years of HIV work before working with PACT, and I had never seen patients this sick. But these are folks who are really, really struggling to take their medicine, to get in, and so sometimes I meet them for the first time while they're hospitalized. A lot of them, I'm sure this is familiar to other people in these types of programs, there's addiction issues, there's a ton of mental illness. I really appreciate you talking about how under-resourced we are about behavioral health, because that is a huge issue everywhere. There's a lot of trauma in our population, so a lot of issues around trust and just fear, and a ton of homelessness. I'm sure we are not alone in struggling with finding housing for everybody who needs it, and that the fact that people who aren't housed really struggle to take care of their health. Some of our patients are undocumented, so we're the only program they can really qualify for, and just we work with them around a variety of health goals. So basically, the way our program works is the CHWs visit people in their homes usually weekly. We're a pretty intensive program, and we try to build close relationships. There's a lot of support. We use a health curriculum to help educate them about the illness, although we often find that the reason people aren't taking their medicine is not because they don't understand how the medicine works. So they get it. I mean, sometimes they're confused about it or there's some distrust of the medical system, but really there are a host of other issues they are already dealing with. And the other piece is that the CHWs accompany them to all their medical appointments, or we try. Many of them have multiple specialists, so there's their cardiology and their kidney and their lung and their heart, you know, so we prioritize as best we can. And then we do have a directly observed therapy program. This is a daily visit for very high-need patients. It's really small. It's the only one of its kind in Boston. A lot of providers, when they refer their patient in the first place, are like, sign them up for DOT. Please go to their house every day and watch them take their pills. But that's so intensive, and so really it's a small cohort of people who have high need, who really need that level of support, and also are motivated enough to open the door every morning when you show up. But for the people who are ready for that, it's a lifesaver, really. It makes an enormous, enormous difference. Those are some of the tools of our trade. We've been thinking a lot about how to expand this model and how to support it with possibly shrinking federal HIV dollars. And one of the ways we're doing it is a brand new collaboration with a health center we've worked with for a really long time called Codman Square Health Center in Dorchester. And so the way that this worked is Sori had been with the PAC team for 10 years at the time that we switched over, and they decided to contract a full-time CHW just in their program at this one health center, but they wanted that person to get the support and the training of an existing CHW team, so they contracted it to PACT. This is the first time we're doing this, and it's been, I would say, interesting as an experience, but it's going really great now, and Sori now has, her experiences now are both from kind of the original piece of working with all these different hospitals all over the city, and now to really focusing at one. So I'm just going to say one piece kind of from a programmatic angle and then let Sori take over on the CHW challenges. So I think, I feel like it's like, you know, we have some funding challenges sometimes, huge shocker, I'm sure. So we are always trying to find the best way to track our data, to find useful information, to feed it back into the work, to figure out how effective we're being. And it's tricky. It's really tricky. And we had different resources when we were part of a huge hospital than we do now. We started a program, we had a software program we started several years ago that's now kind of glitchy. And I'm always trying to decide what should I do to make sure I don't lose any of my old data or make the CHW spend a million years typing stuff in that, I don't know. Same challenges I'm sure a lot of programs deal with. And then Boston has a ton of teaching hospitals. The majority of them are that way. So every year, all the residents and fellows turn over, and then I've got to go out and be like, hi, I'm Rachel. You should refer to our program. So that's just a tricky piece, although it's great. It's great quality medicine, but it's a lot of turnover, and patients also struggle with that. And then I said a piece about data. I'm going to turn this part to Sori.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Sori Santana. So in territorial and distrust, I've encountered that a lot, challenges with now my team and before where, like Kim said before, well, I do that too, it's very challenging to be able to provide the services that the patient needs because I do home visits, so it is a bit different to with nurses and other providers. And so to us, for the experience that I had, it has created in the past staff split in between CHW and providers as well as patients. And both patients and CHWs, we sorry. My bad. I know I gotta read it. I've had issues with where we feel, I feel disrespected because I've gone to appointments where they don't tell us they've been canceled, and then I show up, oh, well, I'm sorry, we canceled them. So it's miscommunication as well. So we don't learn much about the communication with emails and phone calls and getting in touch with each other so that we know what's going on.
For those of you standing or sitting back, there are some seats up here. If you have an empty seat next to you, could you please raise your hand?
There's some seats up here if people are interested in coming up and having a seat, so you don't have to sit on the floor. They don't bite up here. Really nice. Some of my colleagues are here. They're really pleasant. Hi, my name is Ami Shaw, and I'm the program director at the Los Angeles County Department of Health Services program. It's a new program called Care Connections, and this is my colleague.
My name is Brandy Sankey, and I'm one of the community health workers with the program.
So thank you for this opportunity. I think it's kind of interesting that we're following both Sinai and PACT, because our program is really kind of a mixture of that. I come from Sinai, I used to work there for 9 years and joined the LA County team about 4 years ago. And Dr. Clemens Hong, actually, who's really innovated this whole program at the county, came from PACT. So a lot of our approaches are building on both of theirs. LA County, as you know, is probably as big as the state. It's about 10 million people that live there. The second largest municipal health system in the entire nation. So we're really doing the work of, you know, some of these communities are 50,000 people that are serving 50,000 people in a community in Chicago, right? South LA or South Lawndale. And Boston, certainly a lot smaller. LA County is just this mammoth place. So we've definitely got the system issues. But we also are a very integrated system. There's 19 health centers and 4 hospitals, annually caring for over 670,000 annual patients, et cetera. So, I mean, I think the main thing I want to talk about here is that the Board of Supervisors, who actually manages the system, has actually funded CHWs. So I wanted to repeat that because this is a huge deal. We just talked about funding challenges, right? LA County is taking the lead in actually funding and securing the jobs of community health workers as new roles in healthcare delivery. So proud of all of our health workers. And we're gonna tell you a little bit more about what we're doing with them. It's a really new program, so we have this mission and vision, but it's really not something that we're wedded to necessarily, and it's evolving. We've only started in the field since March, so a little over 6 months. But our goal is to not just be a model for care delivery where we're integrating new health workers, but really turn it into a community-based model. And that's sort of down the road. But that is our ultimate vision, to have this community-based piece to health systems that have often been working in silos in the past. So our program aims, and I apologize, my slide is, I didn't fix this. So our program aims are, as you know, most of ours, is to reduce costs, to bend the curve on healthcare dollars. We actually added one more there to actually have workforce delivery to enhance workforce, the CHW workforce in particular, to reduce the admissions and ED utilizations that we all talk about are wasting our dollar, healthcare dollars. And then we also have these goals of improving patient satisfaction and provider satisfaction, because we see a lot of providers leaving systems like a safety net system where you're just challenged, and provide patients too. Many of you have probably talked about that, where there's distrust of the system, or people don't even feel respected themselves, and oftentimes patients start to devalue their own health and their own self because they don't even feel like they're being respected. So And then lastly, the idea of having our program actually integrate into the entire program, to the entire system. And we are seeing remnants of that already, like the beginnings of, not remnants, but so the beginnings of having influence not just over our primary care work, but also in other areas. And we'll talk a little bit about that shortly. So I'll let Brandy talk about the CHW role.
Okay, so again, my name is Brandy Sankey, but before I begin, I have two of my coworkers here with me. Mm-hmm. So I have Minerva Cano. I'm sorry, I messed up your photo opportunity moment, but Minerva Cano is here. She works at Martin Luther King Outpatient Center in South Los Angeles, and we have Ashley Anyokwo that works at Hubert Humphrey Comprehensive Health Center, also in South Los Angeles. I actually work at El Monte Comprehensive Health Center, and it's considered part of the East side of Los Angeles. So with that said, our CHW care management role, we have different pieces. We have a patient engagement and accompanying piece. So what happens is when it is that we meet our patients, we go through kind of like this survey information, like making sure that they have the right address, telephone number, contact information, anyone that they'd want us to contact, or when we do home visits, how it is that we're supposed to introduce ourselves. So we introduce the program, we get to know them, and that's the first piece of information that we get. We have our social support systems, where it is that we are looking for different things in the community to be able to help our patients with. We have a comprehensive assessment and care planning that's like this huge, thick survey that helps us gauge kind of like where the person is at. So it gives us a lot of information about mental health related issues, abuse, substance abuse, any type of services that they might need. All is based in that survey based on how they answer. We have our health system navigation that we help them with, care transition support, chronic disease and support, health coaching, and advanced illness and management support. Okay. So, and then within that circle, we have the patient and we are the CHW, we work together. All right, so our challenges with integrating into the health, the care delivery team, we have a few bullets. Some of them have been touched upon already. A lot of times they're unfamiliar with our roles, who we are, what we do, and how we can do it. So there's a little bit of a trust issue with kind of letting us loose with working with the patients and trusting that we can do our job. Creating the structure for communication with the PCP, they're busy. So it's a hit or miss in the clinic or the hospitals. We have to try to find the time to talk to them. And surprisingly, they are receptive when you find that time and you get into the groove with them. They're willing to talk to you. Resistance from outside the complex care management team has been reiterated. Some people just, you know, aren't sure of the unknown, and it's hard to work with them, but we're working through that. Learning the medical language, we're not medically trained professionals, haven't gone to medical school, so sometimes the way they talk to us, you're like, I don't know what that means, but you ask, and they're willing to explain it to you, so we learn. Prioritizing the social needs in the medical setting, sometimes a doctor wants one thing and the patients want another, so it's like you have to figure out how to make the two a cohesive unit, trying to make sure that all the needs are met. And being an advocate for patient-centeredness within the system, just making sure that the patient comes first and making sure that they get the care that they need. So those are the challenges that we've had.
Great, thank you. And I'm gonna just really talk about two main areas. One is the implementation and the second is sort of the technical piece of the design and actually making this work. Brandy summarized really some of our on-the-ground issues, but on an implementation force, as I mentioned earlier, it's a new workforce. So it's changing the culture of healthcare delivery, and that both is at the macro level with respect to, you know, providers not knowing what to do or who to rely on, the roles, as Brandy alluded to, but then also in the communities. Communities are like, who is that and why are they calling me? It's not my nurse calling me, it's not my doctor calling me, but it's a community health worker. And so there's a lot of, I don't know if you want to call it sort of education about this role that is really valuable. And over time, we've seen that even with our case conferences, we do these case presentations, and the CHWs have done a phenomenal job of sharing what value they bring to their patients. And I think that's demonstrated the most about in terms of getting buy-in from the providers. And then lastly, just technical issues in terms of, we're honing in on the high-risk patients, and I didn't really talk too much about that, but the specific patients we're looking at are those high-risk, that 5% that everyone always talks about. And that, defining them and identifying who they are is obviously a little bit of a challenge, and so we've experienced some of that. And just this idea of a medical-centered home and the safety net system that we're in is relatively new, too. So the other big piece is that we're working within a safety net system that is often challenged. And so we experience some of those challenges as well as sort of this new piece. So already trying to fix a system, but then also bringing a new piece into that new system. So thank you very much.
Okay. So now it's up to Maini, and then we can get into some really great discussion. I'm Reverend Deborah Hickman, and I am the founder and CEO of Sisters Together and Reaching. It is the home of To Maini Hope for Health. It is a program. To Maini Hope for Health is a program that actually was born out of the fact that we have been for 23 years, Sisters Together and Reaching has provided a lot of support services and outreach to the HIV and AIDS community. So we felt like in the changing paradigm of the Affordable Care Act that we needed to transition, but not away from doing the work that we very much love, but to doing the work that we know that we knew and know now that we could expand into actually providing community health workers with all of the CMS grants that were coming out for innovation and a change and a fixing in the medical system. And so thereby came a community health worker model. And so I'm going to go through and try not to be nervous and try not to talk too fast, because as a preacher, I know how to do that very well. And so here I just want to give you a brief overview of our mission, our core implementation principles, our model, and the To Maini community health worker case managers, and the challenges to primary care integration. So first, our mission is expanding access to health, wellness, and supportive services for underserved communities through innovative collaborations with health, business, and social service systems. Our vision for To Maini is shaping the future of an integrated, community-driven healthcare delivery system. And I'll speak more about that in our discussion because of the fact that To Maini is slightly different from our models that are directly affiliated with through the hospitals. We actually are a community-based organization providing community health workers to Johns Hopkins, who is our subcontracted partner. They subcontracted to Maini to actually provide community health workers in addition to community health workers that they themselves already housed. How we got to the table is we felt like community health workers coming from the community had more engagement and knew how to save money, how to reduce emergency department utilization, as well as how to reduce the readmissions to the hospital in a 30-day system, as well as educate our community on the chronic diseases that they had. And so our model actually looked at and presented to Johns Hopkins that we would hire a community health worker manager, as well as five additional community health workers that hailed from the communities that Johns Hopkins was looking for in seven different zip codes. And they ended up giving us the contract and assigning us to three of those zip codes. And we were challenged to hire individuals from the community that actually would be community health workers. They received training that was based on modified community health worker training module through New York University's model, as well as through the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control model. We combined them to come up with the core competencies and also to look at chronic disease management and to give them also the skills that they would need in terms of being able to document and the like. The community health workers that we identified actually came to us with more experience than we thought. We did not utilize what we already considered community health workers in our agency because they were still out there doing counseling and testing for HIV. So we actually incorporated a different arm that was looking at disease specific, and some of it, yes, did cross boundaries with the HIV patients that we serve as well. And so we partnered with other community-based organizations, and specific, we partnered with the Men and Family Center for them to provide community navigators, people that live right on the blocks where patients that were being assigned to us from Johns Hopkins, so that after we had done our assessment, and I'll tell you more about that, that assessment was 13 pages. It was actually integrated with Johns Hopkins assessment and the assessment that STAR was already utilizing. In order for us to be able to say to Hopkins, we don't need you to send out registered nurses when you have community health workers that are capable and have capacity to actually conduct the assessment tool, bring it back to the office, and then have a nurse case manager, a RN case manager that we also hired, that would be able to say this is what their care plan should look like, and it would then get entered into what was called the J-Care system, a Salesforce system that I despise. And Hopkins won't kill me for saying it. They are finally going to change that system over. But it actually, we got our patients from Johns Hopkins through them utilizing what they call a predictive risk model that actually assigned the highest risk patients. The reason why Johns Hopkins was willing to contract with us is because they had a great deal of patients that they call their high risk, hard to reach patients that their community health workers were not able to identify. So we worked very closely with them and their multidisciplinary care team, having a multitude of meetings week after week, day in, day out. I've never been to so many meetings in my life. So, and Demetrius is going to talk about, you want to talk about their role?
I can.
Okay.
I wasn't prepared to talk about the role, but good afternoon again, everyone. My name is Demetrius Frazier. I'm the CHWCM's manager for the program. We address the barriers related to cultural, language, literacy. If you just refer to the slides, it's a brief overview of the role of our CHWs. We go into the homes on a daily basis to assess the patients. We assist the patients with their medical appointments. We assist the patients with building a relationship with their physicians because, as she spoke earlier, some of these patients, you go into their homes and their high priority is not their health, but they have a BGE, energy assistance, that they need assistance with. They may have a hole in their floor that they're walking around on every day. So we just make those proper assessments for them and referrals for them. I just want to talk about some of the programmatic challenges that we have had. So from the start, we knew that there would be some resistance from our patients because in the East Baltimore City community that we have, there has been a long history of distrust of the Johns Hopkins Institute. So initially what we did was we developed a packet, an introduction packet that we mailed to the patients. That had an introduction letter. It had a face sheet with all five of the CHW faces, the face of myself and our director, and also program information about To My Eni as well as our STAR program. And from that letter, the call started rolling in. We even had some patients to come into our office to figure out who we were, why are we calling them, how did we get their information. So from that, what we did was we offered a dinner where some of the community came into the dinner and we talked to them about our program, the goal of our program, and even talked to them about our organization. And from that, monthly, we have what we call community health education sessions where we invite the community as well as our patients, as well as some of the patients of the community health workers employed by Hopkins, where we talk to them about health, diabetes, and some of the other health disparities that they are dealing with. Secondly, there was a lack of provider familiarity. Of course, some of the clients called their PCPs, hey, how you doing? Have you heard of this program? They did not hear about To My Eni, so they told their patients, do not trust us, do not give them any of your personal information. So from that, we sat at the table with Hopkins, and from that, we now sit weekly in patient rounds. We sit with the PCPs and other clinical staff to talk to them about the patients, what's going on in their homes, and that is across the board with all of the clinics that our patients go to. Limited access. There has been limited access. to with the health IT systems. Seven, okay, so I have to stop, but you can ask me more questions when I see you. Okay.
Can we give just one more round of applause to our presenters? And so we do want to be mindful of time. We designed this panel discussion so that there's a lot of interaction between you guys and the panel. So I just want to start off by asking the panel, collectively, each as a program, could you guys just give two or three points as to what your main challenges were to integration and what some of the best practices you've implemented as a program to address some of these challenges? Yeah. And as the panelists answer, we're going to have a couple mic runners. We have Dr. Clemens Hong up in the front, and I think we have another microphone, or we may not.
Do we have a second one? Maybe. If not, I'll run. Okay.
Go ahead.
And so if you can only imagine that Johns Hopkins is a mega beast to deal with, and that we have a lot to go through of listening, that our legal department says that you can't do this, you can't do that, we can't grant, co-grant with you, we can't. Our biggest issue was getting them to really begin to settle down and trust, because they actually awarded Sisters Together in Reaching and the Men and Family Center the largest community-based grant historically that they have ever done. And so the last 3 years have really been a growing experience through each of our teams, through them dealing with the community and through us dealing with their system. But we were able to actually get them to come to the place of understanding that we needed to know to be able to get in to the CRIS system, and we also needed to be able to have at least a room only for Epic, so that they knew and understand we needed to be able to identify their patients, because what came out of the risk prediction model did not actually give us factual data, and a lot of times in terms of addresses, in terms of the number of emergency room department visits that our patients had actually experienced, and we needed a little bit more clarity. But those are some of the major issues, as well as that Dimitri spoke to the fact that providers, Hopkins had not done a sufficient job of making certain that all of their departments, all of the seven clinics that we have patients in, actually understood that they had now signed on to a contract with Tumaini, and we were going to be actually either in the clinics when they came for their appointments, or we would be going to their homes. And the biggest thing, and the reason why I hated the Salesforce system, it did not integrate with Epic, so that the information, the assessments that we got on the patients, the actual care plans were not integrated in the system with Epic to make certain that the patient's care was congruent and fluid.
All the time. doing this together for the patients. And if you keep that in mind, then we can try to So PACT has been around for a while, so some of the kind of initial structural stuff has been more or less resolved for us, but there are still pieces about, you know, I think we all sort of have felt this. It's a lot about role clarification, and so sometimes my role as a manager is just to say, no, like they're not, her role is not to like show up at this person's house and just like drive them everywhere. No, seriously, she can't just like bodily lift the person and drag them into the car. Because so much of the time, that's like what they want. The providers are so desperate to get these people in that they're like, can't you just drive them everywhere? She's just using her own car. And you're just, no, that's a mess. And also, I think sometimes when, you know, we started to talk a little before about kind of territoriality, and particularly in places where there's all these different roles, just kind of making sure that other care team members feel like they're still included, feel like they're still recognized, don't feel, it's not like, we don't mean to be territorial about people, certainly, or about issues or diseases, but sometimes I think people get really nervous about like, who's doing what and how's your thing different from my thing. And I'll let Sori speak a little bit more on kind of how she addresses these two challenges, some of these challenges.
Well, one of my challenges is building trust with patients and providers, as well as using my fluid personality and knowing when to take it out and when to hide it. So I call it hiding. So it's challenging. So and then also sharing information with the team and being respectful at the same time with everybody just in general.
So, you know, we're going to echo, you can see there's a lot of, we also see challenges, and this is role clarity and confusion, and I think we've seen that stem through a few things, and then what we've somewhat tried to do to address it. So, one is that community health workers, you know, it's not a new profession. They're called lots of different words, so I try to express that to people. They're probably new as integrating into healthcare teams. But these women and men have been doing this work, and you probably have worked alongside them before. Let me tell you what they might have been called and what you do. And the same respect of Ben, she's not a translator. Like, that's not her job. She's doing more than that. So, you know, role clarity on both ends. And some things that we've tried to do that is think about handoff and communication between all staff members, having community health workers at the table during rounding and different aspects of that. We've also done a lot around quality assurance and evaluation of community health worker readiness, and that allows us to then go back to these providers and say, no, you know, the curriculum that we're using to train them has been approved. It's been approved by your department chair. We've put them through this extensive evaluation. We go out with them every so often. And again, it's not checking up on community health workers. It's more to give providers the peace of mind that we are monitoring things. And then on the same side of that is, and Kim can talk about some of this, but really providing mentorship for our community health workers from a senior community health worker. So we're addressing both sides of that. And then another thing that really comes up with us is buy-in not just from the physician is what we talk about a lot, but buy-in from the administrative assistant behind the desk. Who is this person and what they're doing?
Yeah, so as far as the challenges for community health workers within the healthcare system, you know, you really want people to understand that you're there, you know, to provide the service and not to take away from anybody else's job, but to add and enhance what's already in place. So again, we talked about the system buy-in, not just the people who hired you to be on board with what you're doing, but the actual institution that you're attached to understand what your purpose and your role is. Because again, it's a huge asset to know what kind of value you have sitting under your roof, but you're not even aware of what's there because everybody's not on the same page. So we try to talk about what we do in every type of forum that we come across to let them know what CHWs are, how they work, how beneficial they can be, because it's one thing to talk about it, but you really have to show something concrete to let people know what a CHW does and how it betters the establishment that you're with and the great epidemiologists that are attached to Sinai Urban Health Institute to make sure that those numbers add up. So when we're talking about the cost effectiveness of a CHW, the benefits that they provide, they can see that because most people in these positions recognize numbers and percentages. And as long as you can evaluate and quantify this, you can definitely prove the point of the value of a CHW. So I think that's how we can combat those issues of them, of those challenges that we have.
And I just wanted to take 2 points. I kind of rushed through it, and I apologize. With the buy-in from the primary care physician and the clinical staff, that's very important. Like Reverend Hickman spoke to, they didn't know anything about the 2-MIE program. They never heard of the 2-MIE. So what we did was we went back to the table and told Hoffman about the issue that we were having. And from that, they invited us to the clinical rounds, which is held every week at every site. And so now we have that developed relationship with the PCPs as well as the clinical staff. They're calling us, they're emailing us about the patient. Hey, how you doing? Have you seen this patient lately? She's missed 2 appointments. What's going on? Is there anything I can do? So building that relationship was very helpful. As well as the IT, I wanted to speak to that, the health IT system. If we were 7 months in and we did not have access to Epic nor CRISP, and that is very important because we had a huge load, a caseload of patients that we could not reach. And so once we that was Hopkins again and told them about that issue, we gained full access to CRISP, but we're still dealing with the Epic issue because we are not part of Hopkins, we are not the institute. We only have read-only access to Epic. So that has been helpful. We have been able to locate patients, and when a patient is visiting an ER at a hospital across town, we get that information. And if they're admitted, we can go to that hospital across town, talk to that patient, tell them about the program, hey, I've been looking for you. And from there, we have had great success in getting these patients in.
Great. I think there's a question. Yeah.
All right, so in Chicago, we're a team here that has a large CMS grant where we're trying to hire 30 community health workers and integrate them into the UIC system to do care coordination for 6,000 children with chronic illness. And as you guys have talked about role acceptance, you know, there's different patient needs, of course, right? And then there's different types of community health workers. And we have some community health workers who are brand new, we've never done this before, they've done the basic training, but that's it. We have some who have a ton of experience, some who've done specialized asthma training or sickle cell training. And so not only are we trying to get the system to understand what is a community health worker, how does this integrate, but then, well, this community health worker is a little different though, and then this one's a little different, right? She does something different. And it's not just educating the providers, we need to educate the HR person, right?
Yes.
And everyone. And okay, so now we're negotiating for a higher rate for her because she's done an extra, you know, 200 hours of training and work, and we have to define this model, get the system, like figuring it out. So committing the providers, honestly, is usually the easiest part because as soon as they figure out that we're a service to them, they're all over it. It's more the infrastructure that we're really struggling to understand how to navigate. And so we'd like to hear your like challenges and thoughts around that.
HR is a beast. I mean, they have so many rules and regulations they have to follow. That's a joke. Yeah, Molly, I think it's a struggle. We've tried to, you know, one thing that we've really done is maintain that everyone we hire in a community health worker position, that they only have to have a high school degree or a GED, since that mirrors the communities that we're serving. And so in order to protect that education level, HR often wants to make their salaries lower, and we've really tried to fight for, you know, understanding that this position, people's lives are literally in their hands. I mean, I could never do this job. It's crazy how the, so we built a scale of CHW 1, 2, and 3 of years of experience that we try to move people in, and we've been successful with that. We'd like to do more with it, but I think you know better.
Yeah, that's a really great question. Thank you. And certainly at the county, given that this is now an established professional, actually it is starting to become a profession, at least in the county system. They had community health workers prior to our program, but because it cost money at us, they were left behind because that role wasn't there anymore. So we've really made a point in actually trying to integrate with other programs that have been done in Tucson City to try to figure out how we can establish standardized training. And there's a little bit of pushback. I think there's the politics in the state of California where the Pomodoro environment field very strong, and some are really for the certification and sort of, you know, identifying some certain capacity competencies, and others are less so interested in that. Given that we're in the county, we do have more competencies and have established them. We also have a very formal training that everyone went through. That has also evolved. Our first cohort that went through this was back in November 2014. These trainings are here right now. They had a far more extensive training than our second cohort, but then we've now realized that that training needs to be ongoing and continuous as part of professional development, not just prior to being hired. So that's something we're starting to integrate into the process of the program. It's interesting because we're trying to like sort of decentralize, but at the same time maintain certain things that need to be centralized because the system can't handle that. So that ongoing training is something that we'll probably continue to own. There is certain competencies, and again, there's a large conversation going on in the state of California, what those competencies should be. It's tricky because life experience is something that we value the most, and yet it's really hard to quantify that. And so every single one of our CHWs comes from the community, but they all come with varying experiences. And again, that's something we can't really standardize. But what we have done, again, is we've done a lot of life experience sharing, and we've constantly been doing team building so that everyone can understand different cultural perspectives from each other. Because even our CHWs, like I said, we're going to talk about this. We're in East LA, South LA, very different areas. I mean, Los Angeles alone, you can be in certain parts of LA and never even understand it in another area. So it's so diverse, which is really one of the exciting parts of working in Los Angeles, but also probably one of the more challenging ones, which is why we have 25 CHWs, and I think each of them brings different things, and they're always sharing.
Yes, I'm from South Carolina, and I worked for and now am consulting to train community, what we call community parents, for a private nonprofit organization. It's not connected to any medical community. It's all about peer support, and I specifically work with parents of kids with asthma. I'm a certified asthma educator with public health. And my question to you guys, and really anybody in the room, I agree that the community health worker, or in our case community parent, should be hired from the community that we're trying to reach, but that's been a real challenge for us to find that right person. They may be a parent of a child with asthma, but do they fit those qualities? Because we know not everybody can be a community health worker. And then on top of that, when they might just have a high school diploma, because we are primarily working with African American and Hispanic communities, we run into the issue of them having to do all the paperwork and the documentation, entering stuff in the computer, and that's really been a challenge because they didn't have that training before, and that might, there might be quite a learning curve. So I would love to hear from anybody that might be willing to share their hiring process that they've used. Is there some, the specific qualities and how you go and market your positions in the community? Because that's been our biggest challenge. When we find the right person, it's incredible what can happen, but we've had more stops and starts. Because we have 14 in the state of South Carolina for this one organization, and they're all over the state. And some areas explode, some areas get nowhere, because we haven't done our job of finding that right person. Is anybody willing to share?
So I would like to share, because I think one of the things that I would be remiss in saying, is that first and foremost, the system all of a sudden wants to take control of what has been historically from the beginning of time, community health workers, pomodors, and the like, whatever we want to call them, they have been around and they have been the reason why a lot of our community members have survived to this day. And if our medical system really wants to innovate, it has to become innovative and being able to bring community health workers in from the various community. That means those persons that have actually been the assistants to Mr. Frazier, to Ms. A, Ms. C, or Mr. D, or whatever, and say, how have you been able to get them to keep taking their medication? How have you been able to help them get to their medical appointments and the like? And what are the issues that would keep you from being able to be hired by Johns Hopkins? Is the lack of education, the lack of documentation skills, but not the lack of inter and intrapersonal skills, and that we should not try to pay people less because they do not have a degree, but we should pay them what they are worth because they have been our eyes, our ears, our hands, and feet on the ground. And so when we got involved with Hopkins, and Hopkins says, well, we don't pay our CHWs this much. I said, I'm not Hopkins. I am Sisters Together and a community-based organization. I am paying people for what they are worth, what the core competencies that they need to have, what I look for when I hire. I want to know that you have the dynamism of these persons sitting here as community health workers and the ones that are sitting in the audience that can actually go in and sit with Mr. Grumblebox that says, know to everybody, know to everything, that has some lesbian up in them to be able to say, well, come on, darling, now how did you get from being here to here? The same way you were able to overcome your drug addiction, you were able to stop smoking, this is what we now need to employ because I believe in you. We need people that come to the table that show us that they are motivated, that they have the unction to be able to go and sit in someone's house and not look around and say, my God, roach eggs all over the wall. I can't believe that this is the job. But then you need those people that actually want to learn how to document their process as simply as possible so that the providers say, got it. There's a problem in the home because this woman is living with her grandchildren. They're taking her medications, and thereby she can't take her medications, and she doesn't have any additional copay to pay for another prescription that gets the provider's attention that now I got the whole story, the whole picture, and everybody is working together.
Yeah. So there was, Kim, go ahead.
I just had a little comment to add about how do you find the right CHW from the community that you're assessing. The thing, I hope I'm giving away a trade secret, Melissa, pinch me if I am. But what we do at Sinai is we advertise in the community that we're trying to reach and abroad. In other areas. However, we focus on that community. What we do is we do pre-training. We take and do maybe a day and a half of what it would be like in the life of a community health worker, what's expected of you. And being the person that's training, you can see what's happening. You can see the spirit of the person who will make an excellent community health worker. So it takes all the extra stuff out of there because right now you've already seen what they can do. You've already assessed their passion. You've already pinpointed, that's the one. And then you can sort of focus on developing that person. So I believe in, definitely hiring from the community that you're looking to serve, absolutely. But put them through that training. And then once they come in, another assessment needs to be done because everybody doesn't know what a mouse is. They want to shake it or throw it. Who knows? Some people just don't know. But that by experience does play a huge role. But then you got to get them to where they are. You're an excellent community health worker. Let's try to help you with this aspect. So it's constantly mentoring. It's constant. You never just put them in the spot and say, you're done. This is good. You're good as is. There's always a constant learning. So I believe in constant education of the community health worker, but a pre-screening before you even get to investing all that money into the training or the hiring process. And this has just been from experience being in that arena.
I think that definitely what they were saying about kind of how to find people and where to find people, the last piece I would say is that we've written a hiring guide that we've given to a lot of other places, and so I would say first there's so many people come into an interview and they're so nervous that you're not going to see who they are, you're not going to see what their life is, people in their homes, and you're not going to see what they can do. So it's on the interviewer to set the tone for that interview, to be warm, to laugh and smile, to say, to be as much as you can, to set an environment of like, we're just going to talk to each other for a little while. Like, I think it makes, even to acknowledge, I know this is scary, whatever you can do to make it as low pressure as possible so they can be who they are. We do a lot of role playing in the interview, so we have a whole bunch of case scenarios that are really basically exactly what we would see in a home situation. And you said before, Reverend Hickman, about the interthespian. Really, I know this sounds goofy, but like we act out what happens in that scene because I want them to get into it, and they do. And the people who have this skill can absolutely meet you there, and you will see some people in that moment will be like, oh my gosh, like tell me more about that. And other people are like, what do you think the issue is? You can see, like, right in that moment, you can tell if this somebody who has, because I say all the time when I talk about hiring, CHWs get one chance to make a first impression, which sounds obvious, right? But I really think it's important when hiring, you want someone who can meet a stranger, where you don't have that kind of trust and you don't know each other, and convey warmth, and convey real, you know, authenticity and openness. And so we do a lot of role playing, and then at the end, we have sort of a list of qualities, basically, that we're looking for, and we kind of score it. And among the things like compassion, humor, warmth, insight, self-awareness about like, do you realize what you're doing? Do you notice any moments where the person you're working with suddenly gets uncomfortable and backs up? Does the person you're interviewing notice that happening and adjust? And there are people who do this like they are magicians. Like, it's amazing. And you will totally see that in the interview. And other people who freeze right up. And you know, maybe they're not ready, and they'll be ready later on, but they're not quite ready yet. So.
And I think something too to remember, like I'm one of the CHWs that doesn't necessarily come from every community that my patients come from. I have homeless patients. I've never been homeless myself, but I think the biggest part is just being able to have empathy. You know, empathy and being able to empathize with people from wherever they come from. You know, you could live in Beverly Hills or you could live in Compton. It shouldn't really make a difference for you to be able to empathize with who it is you're working with and dealing with.
I think we had a question in the back.
Yeah, so I just want to thank everybody. That was a really good presentation. I had a specific question for the group and I'll take I have a comment and a question. So my comment would be, I know you guys were alluding to maybe like having different roles. And so I would maybe say, maybe it's kind of like how a public health, like I'm an epidemiologist, but I'm also a public health, so you know, kind of like see both like other areas. And then two, my question specifically was, because you had funding through the county, was there, I guess as a numbers person, what argument or what piece of data would you say was the biggest, or was that a driving motivator? What was the biggest thing kind of like secure the funding? Was it, how did you prove it, like, you know, the assessments kind of, that'd be good to accept.
Can you repeat the first question? Sorry, something about
Oh,
just that's a great question, and actually, clearly, I wasn't there during that time, so I'm going to defer to Clemens, who is standing in the middle of the room.
So, in short, it was driven by the Board of Supervisors, so there wasn't a huge argument made except that the Board of Supervisors wanted to create jobs, and they wanted to do it in a meaningful way for the community. So.
Yeah.
Oh.
So I work for an integrated healthcare system in Utah, and we're looking at implementing community health workers. The way we're looking to do it is we would fund them, but community agencies would hire them. But one of our big questions is around data sharing, because obviously as a healthcare system, we're interested in the data and the outcomes of what's happening out there. We know that community agencies want data from us, and yet there's all this question and concern at PHI, and how do we share this data back and forth? So how have you guys addressed that?
So at Sisters Together and Reaching, we've addressed it that at our meetings that are held in our organization, there is an evaluator that has been assigned to us from Johns Hopkins, and we have already in our MOU, it's laid out as to what is our intellectual property, what is Johns Hopkins' intellectual property, and what is our shared property. And we have been in discussion about the evaluation piece that is coming out, about our publications that we're starting to work on, and all those pieces. So we're in a really good shared relationship. And I would say, if you're going to be working with community-based organizations, make certain that both parties agree to the memorandum of understanding or the memorandum of agreement or the contract that you set up, and that both parties have legally been advised on what the language is so that no one feels left out and you know what property belongs to you and what property doesn't. And that way you're off to a great start.
Good afternoon. Thank you for your presentation. It's really great. I'm Deborah Flores from Lago, Texas. I see some of my fellow Texans here. But I was wondering, hi Carl. I think in Lago we've done a good job of integrating the community health worker into primary care. What we're struggling with is supervision. So we have people supervising community health workers that don't know anything about them. Have y'all had any success in addressing this problem?
You wanted to know.
That was great.
I do a fair amount of supervisor training, and so we do CHW training kind of around New England and nationally, and one piece I would say is that we ideally are training everybody together from the beginning. I really like training CHWs with supervisors, with if there's other, like I just trained two chronic disease settings in Boston that are both adding CHWs to community health centers. So in the training, there were the CHWs, there were the medical assistants, there were the social workers, the docs who were putting the whole pilot together were in the room. Everybody is trained together, and I think both that actually really, it's fun. And it's like people can like kind of hang out, people can build relationships, you can share something. You also end up with a shared language much more. And I think also it can be a really great moment for often, whenever I do the, polite about this. Inevitably, the CHLB is the ones who get it the fastest, like particularly the stuff about building relationships and counseling skills. Whoever's in the room, the CHLBs are immediately the ones who are like, oh, and like the other providers sometimes are like, well, but what about this? So I think that training everybody together is really great. And then in terms of super, a lot of people use motivational interviewing stuff in their
right.
So we do a really nice, we try to do a really nice one, like full day MI session with everybody together, and then we do a mirror MI session for supervisors. So it's all adapted about, again, using those same skills. So we're kind of retraining people about drawing from the wisdom of the person they're supervising. So we have a whole kind of MI for supervisors about a patient issue where you're struggling, where you talk about like how your approach to that patient is working, what's working about it, what's not working, and for like a performance issue, what's working, what's not working. And sometimes that helps to just make sure that the supervisor can really learn from the CHW's experience. And then also shadowing, I think, is a really useful tool, particularly for inexperienced supervisors who don't know the world that well, just going along on some visits with people who have done the work, and as much as possible, not jumping in, because they'll want to be like, well, they're gonna be people you usually want to throw in there, but I think shadowing is a really, really great tool. We have like shadowing observation tools that the supervisor can fill out, like what did you observe, blah, 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 to kind of give feedback, and that is a great learning tool for the supervisor.
And I would say to do that totally with every, when you hire supervisors for CHWs, I think that should be one of your rules. You should have every supervisor go out in the field with your CHW to see what they're experiencing every day. Then you won't have the challenge of what to pay them, because you're like, okay, double that salary. Double that salary. And then give them a company car. I wish that. Okay, but I think that definitely when you're looking for supervision for CHWs, you do need to let them experience the CHW's life, and that means shadowing them, watching them work and go through the process, because then you will understand the whole workings of how it goes, because the CHW job is not the same every day. It's different every day, moment by moment. So you can't just say, oh, this is what a CHW is, every day, all day. No, we are, as one of my co-workers said, we're chameleons. We change. We adapt. We fit the surroundings. So it's adaptability. So your supervisors need to see how great you are and how much of a change agent you are, so that they can say, okay, let me be a fantastic supervisor to this fantastic person that's out in the field with these people, wondering, working every day, making changes and making lives better. So yeah. that should be a part of your core curriculum for your supervisors. They need to be out in the field.
So we have a question coming here, but I would encourage the audience to comment as well as ask questions to the panel.
So while she's coming to the mic, whoever is coming, I'll just say that we take advantage of everything we can get as a community-based organization from Hopkins, and they have a certificate in management training, and I make certain that our manager, our CHW manager, dittos everything that has been said, but is also a part of that process. For you, Jeff.
So I think we're going to move it to the mic, because I cannot keep going.
We have about 15 minutes remaining in the panel, so just so everyone's aware of the time. About 10 minutes remaining in the panel. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm Sylvia. I'm from the hospital in South Brooklyn. Thank you all for an amazing panel and motivating panel. We have what are called patient reps in our hospital that provide a lot of inpatient assistance and are from the community and work really closely with patients and their families to enhance that patient experience. And therefore, maybe not therefore, but don't then have the buy-in to implement an entirely new CHW program. But we want to bring more training, more CHW-like training to our already existing patient reps. And I'm wondering if community health worker training has to be an all-in, complete program, training program, or if there are pieces that you can take from this model and work with what you've already got.
I do this training with non-CHW sites all the time because I want to do better community-based work. Absolutely, Jesus.
Awesome. Thank
you. Okay, I've been waiting so patiently.
Take your time.
I have been in this meeting for quite some time, and I'm just excited to be here and just to hear your energy. I've been a community health worker for over 16 years. I'm not going to say have a question, but a comment that community health workers and people that we serve don't care what you know until they know that you care. So whenever we're out here, they know that we care before we can, those basic needs, we're going to touch those first before we start talking about the asthma. We're going to interject that, but they don't care what you know until they know that you really do care. And so I'm excited. I'm going to keep my energy going as a community health worker because I transferred from Michigan here, and what I do is transferable from state to state to state to state. When you're a community health worker, you're a community health worker. It doesn't matter what state you go to, you just have that passion for it, and that's what you are.
Let me encourage you to take what you say you do at first and document it as that those are social determinants of health that community health workers know so very well, and you need to document how you get them through to beginning to focus on their health care.
Hello, everyone. Maria heard your comment as well, so I wanted to go back to the hiring process. I think you had a question about hiring. We were recently awarded a grant to the CDC to have three CHWs come on board as part of our research and wellness team to serve as extended care team members along the list, kind of serving as linkages between patients' needs and community resources. And through this process, we've been really fortunate to kind of receive guidance from our Massachusetts Department of Public Health, and they have told us, you take as long as you need, but until you feel like the vibe is right, you're getting the right vibe from your community health worker candidate, you're not going to hire them. And thankfully, as of right now, we have two, and we have been hired. We've been doing a lot of interviews, but we have not been hiring, just waiting for that right one. I don't know how much flexibility is there, but that's been, but now, to bring you to my question, it's great. We as community health workers, we're very excited. We serve we're a federally qualified health center. There are very diverse patients, and everything, all of the challenges that you guys have talked about, we're kind of experiencing that from a beginning stage of our project. And my question is, 3 years, great, but I'm already thinking about the next step. What happens after the grant runs out, right? So part of my role as serving as a CHW supervisor is also thinking about how do we kind of get that data, right, to show that, to demonstrate the cost effectiveness of CHWs. So I really want to kind of pull on the experience in this room here to kind of, if you can talk about how
or what have you guys been thinking about to demonstrate exactly that?
I've done a lot of work on this. Can we have 5 minutes and we can talk about your program and what you need to collect? But you know, you're really lucky that you're at an FQHC. So whatever you do, make sure it's documented in your EMRs.
Yeah.
There's a lot of there's actually a great organization who has some systems that you can put in your EMRs that tracks workers paying health workers. I can give you the name after this. I'm so sorry, I can't remember it. It's referenced in my guidebook if you want to look. I think you're at a huge advantage that you're in your FQHC. You can look at their medical records to make sure that everything your community health worker is doing, they're documenting, and that that's in your EMR records as well. But I can give you my email address if you want to talk in more in depth about evaluation.
Yeah, that would be excellent. Thank you.
I want to reiterate, one of the mottos of China was that epidemiologists, we like to count. If you don't count something, it doesn't matter.
Yep.
So people only value what you count, what you measure. So we always have that. Yeah, so if you want to show value, I'd start counting now, because in 3 years, the time is going to fly, and in 3 years, we're going to have to start to show like, that sustainability plan, thinking especially for people that don't have money, is essential. So
right. I'll talk about that. Sorry. In terms of counting, that's exactly what I'm thinking about. What do we count as?
We count visits, you count phone calls. Like, we also count like attempted contact can be useful.
Yep.
And then there's a really great measure that the New York City Department of Health use, and we train them, we collaborated with them a lot, where we call it completeness. Which is like deciding as a team, do you want to, ideally you're tiering your patients based on level of need or level of service, and then we would measure sort of, if we think this person needs this level of service or this number of visits, what percentage of our patients are getting the level that we kind of are internally prescribing. It's a really useful kind of internal measure. And then whatever biomarkers you have that are helpful, like for HIV, it's sort of a clear stuff about viral load, but any disease state's going to have those. It's like tricky, but it's so much better if you have a baseline, and the baseline is the piece you're going to get afterwards,
right?
So getting those and then deciding what your time markers are, and then also measuring after the person's no longer engaged with this HW is still useful, right?
And while we care about feel-good stuff,
yeah.
No one that funds it really does. They monitor your biomarkers. Did you lower hemoglobin A1C levels? Did you decrease ED visits? Unfortunately.
And you're going to need to know what those ED visits were from a baseline perspective and the dollar amount associated with it, and you would need to be able to show that you did a decrease and that you have a significant saving marker that you have marked out, and you want to make certain that you ask, what is the next step? Well, think about it. I said we have community health worker case managers. We are being challenged by some of the nurses in our state to say that that's a clinical aspect and that CHW should not be doing clinical work, and so rather than say something that would maybe strip me of reverence, I'll just say that we continue to call them that at this moment. We're thinking about changing it to CHW care coordinators, because you also need to look at what is it that the carrier is actually going to pay for? What is it that they actually do on a regular basis that actually means dollars? Anything that translates to decrease in dollars and increase in utilization, that's how you need to think as to where you're going and how you're going to get there.
You can also sometimes get Medicaid claims data. We did this earlier on when we had more research staff in our organization, but getting consent forms to work with Medicaid to literally get claims data from previously, you would have to have each patient sign that release, so patient by patient, but that's tremendous information to have to just show cost savings. Or to show things like decreased hospitalizations, increased prescription filling.
I just
want
to add a qualitative piece quickly. The stories are really impactful, when you do have those stories, it picks up by local newspapers, even national newspapers, city newspapers, and the politicians pay attention to that. So I think that's another piece. So you've got to do everything like on all fronts. The qualitative and the quantitative really do matter. And it depends on your audience, right? So the funders are going to look for numbers, but the newspaper articles and politicians and policy changes will start also with the stories. But we're always telling our kids something to journal. That's really, really impactful from the very beginning.
So we have 2 minutes remaining, and I think we have time for one more question. So go ahead. Yeah,
so,
1 minute remaining.
Thank you very much. My name is Emma Vieira. and the right people. And I do want to go back and just tell you a little bit about what influenced me, and that would be the support group that included someone from Sinai who was in a car accident, and he was not able to walk anymore. And they said to him, well, with your ongoing therapy, you need to think about what you're going to do. So he decided to volunteer at Sinai. Today he's a community health worker. 25 years ago, he became a community health worker and helping people that were in car accidents, that were in substance abuse car accidents. He became a community health worker to help patients who were not able to walk anymore. Then in my other session, we had another person who was also unable to have his health anymore because he was in an accident. And he came in and he was so depressed. And today he's the director of Access Living. Another person that was there who fought for the first high school in the Pilsen community, today he's the alderman. There's so many leaders that, they fought for a cause, they fought for something that they believe in, and today they have other people following that example and, making a difference and gathering people in groups and organizing to help make a difference. That's what community health workers are also a part of. And today I'm a community health worker at the UNC Hospital Public Health Science, and I'm helping to implement the community health worker initiative. And together, I know that we can, especially with what I've seen today. And I'm really excited. Thank you.